ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, रीडिंग फ्रॉम ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 6 टेक्स्ट 5 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड प्रहलाद इंस्ट्रक्ट्स हिज डेमोनियक स्कूलमेट्स ततो यतेत कुशला क्षेमाय भवम् आश्रिता शरीरं पौरुषं यावन् न विपद्येत पुष्कलम् ततो यतेत कुशला क्षेमाय भवम् आश्रिता शरीरं पौरुषं यावन् न विपद्येत पुष्कलम् Ladies, please. Toyateta Kusala. Tata, therefore, yateta, should endeavor, kusala, an intelligent man, interested in the ultimate goal of life, shemaya, for the real benefit of life, or for liberation from material bondage, Bhavam Asrita, who is in material existence? Sariram, the body. Paurusam, human. Yavad, as long as. Na, not. Vipadyeta, fails. Puskalam, stout and strong. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation. Therefore, while in material existence, bhavam asrita, a person fully competent to distinguish wrong from right, must endeavor to achieve the highest goal of life as long as the body is stout and strong and is not embarrassed by dwindling. Purport. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj at the beginning of this chapter, Kaumara Acharit Pragya. The word Pragya refers to one who is experienced and who can distinguish right from wrong. Such a person should not waste his energy and valuable human life simply working like a cat or a dog to develop his economic condition. For one word in this verse, there are two readings, Bhavam Asrita and Bhayam Asrita. By accepting the meaning of either of them will bring one to the same conclusion. Bhayam Asrita indicates that the materialistic way of life is always fearful because at every step there is danger. Materialistic life is full of anxieties and fear, Bhayam. Similarly, accepting the reading Bhavam Asrita, the word Bhavam, refers to unnecessarily trouble and problems. For want of Krishna consciousness, one is put into Bhavam, being perpetually embarrassed by birth, death, old age and disease. Thus, one is surely full of anxieties. Human society should be divided into a social system of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras, but everyone can engage in devotional service. If one wants to live without devotional service, his status as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Sudra certainly has no meaning. It is said, Sthanat Brashta Patantiyada. Whether one is in a higher or lower division, one certainly falls down for want of Krishna consciousness. A sane man is always fearful of falling from his position. This is a regulative principle. One should not fall from his exalted position. The highest goal of life can be achieved as long as one's body is stout and strong. We should therefore live in such a way that we keep ourselves always healthy and strong in mind and intelligence, so that we can distinguish the goal of life from a life full of problems. A thoughtful man must act in this way, learning to distinguish right from wrong and thus attain the goal of life. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Mulitamena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Devamrita Swaminiti Namine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pashyate Desarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktavanda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So we would like to welcome our guests from Core Power Yoga. Thank you, Kumudini, for bringing them. So some of these things could be like, a little hard to understand. This is actually advanced class, Bhagavatam. But it is mentioned just by listening, even if you don't understand, you make spiritual progress. It's like wonderful like that. I'll try to relate to you as much as possible. So in this verse, Prabhupada is talking about fear. Material existence is full of fear. And as long as we think that we are this body, we have to be fearful because the material nature is threatening our bodies and anything related to our bodies at every moment. Because we are spiritual beings, we are not this material covering. The body is like a cage for the soul. And the soul belongs to the spiritual world. And when we are in a foreign atmosphere, the natural byproduct is that fear and anxiety. Just like, we are beings of this earth, so to speak. And then when you're in an airplane or something, naturally, I don't know about you guys, when there's a turbulence or, something, I feel so, nervous. We don't belong there. Similarly, if you put in the ocean, if you put in the water, even if you're on a boat or, you know, whatever, you still feel uncomfortable. You don't call it home. Nobody calls it home when they're in the air or when they're in the water. Similarly, we are spiritual beings, and when we come to this world, material world, we naturally feel fearful. And what we are doing in this material world is also explained in this yoga text, that we are doing so many things, but it's categorized in four activities, namely eating, mating, sleeping, and fearing or defending. And it's the same thing is common actually for both human and animals. In Sanskrit, it's explained that ahara nidra bhaya maithunam cha samanyam etat pasubir narana. These four activities, namely eating, mating, sleeping, and defending, they are common for both human and other lower species of life. So, if we are just engaged in these four activities, even though we are given this special human form, then it's a great loss. Like our founder said once that, you know, a dog is running in four legs, and we are running in four wheels, and we think we are so special, we are so advanced. Just to point out that, you know, that's not the perfection of life, just to be busy. We can understand, all of us, how busy things can get. It's like when they were inventing all these technologies and stuff, there was actually a discussion going on how people will have so much time in their hands, because, you know, all this technology is going to make life easier. And so they wanted to come up with these leisure engineers to give some tips to people how to use their time, because naturally you'll have so much time and you wouldn't know what to do with it. But we can understand that's not the case. Nobody has any time. It's like a five-year-old girl. I was telling her, "You want to, you know, can you chant Hare Krishna?" She said, "Yeah, I'd like to, but I have no time." I was like, "Wow, this is amazing, you know." So this is our position. Prabhupada actually tells a joke. He says how there was actually a four-year-old child. And one morning, this child woke up and asked his mother, "Mom, who's this guy in our kitchen?" And the mother said, "Oh, that's your father, my son." "Oh, my father, I've never seen." Because the father always comes home after the child goes to sleep, and he's already gone to work before the child is already, you know, before the child wakes up. So this is our position. We are so busy eating, mating, sleeping, and defending, especially defending. Collectively and individually, if you look at it, everybody is actually very fearful. The most expenditure for the U.S., as we all know, is, you know, spent on defense. There is so much billions of dollars spent on like weapons and army and jets and, you know, military and like this. But so many terrorists in the form of nature is attacking us, but we can't do anything about it. That's another subject. So this fear is a very big ingredient in this material existence. We are always fearful. From the time we wake up, from the to the time we sleep, you're always in anxiety, whether we park the car in the wrong place, you know, whether we're going to get a ticket, where I'm going to eat lunch, and, you know, I'm going to miss my appointment. And I was just thinking, even as soon as you wake up, you look at yourself in the mirror, and imagine you're like a Hollywood star, and you have like a pimple or something. That's enough to ruin your day. Because it's just like, you know, there's so many paparazzis, they're taking pictures and you want to be in best looks, and but it's not in your control. The pimple would come on its own accord. So in the same way, there is every step, there is fear. Bhagavatam calls this as a forest of enjoyment. We all know about enjoyment. And we all know, we have all seen documentaries about forests, what goes on in the forest, especially after sunset. So Bhagavatam says that this material world is like a forest, this existence like being in a forest. And whoever we may be, we will be put in situation that's beyond ourselves. Just like Arjuna, for example, in Bhagavad Gita. He was such a great person, such a great warrior, but he was put in a situation where he was like crying and he had a breakdown. So all of us, we will face this situation. That's the reality. It's not like we are being negative. We're discussing the realities. One thing is to ignore the reality and artificially think we are positive and happy. Another thing is to deal with the situation. Just like if you have an elephant in the room. If you have like a little mice or something in the room, it's easy to ignore. But if you have an elephant in the room, how can you ignore it? It's just like right there. Similarly, old age, disease, birth, these things are so obvious. And in the yoga texts, ancient yoga texts, they actually say that these are the real problems of life. The real problems of life is that we are born, we're growing old, we're getting sick, we're dying, even though none of us want these things, and it's very artificial for the soul. And the real intelligent person, like it's mentioned in the purport and the translation, is one who is trying to solve these real problems. And we may think, oh, you know, I know how to solve problems. It's like Google has answers to all our questions, right? Google or Yelp or there's so many search engines. But the problem is that material solutions to our problems actually create more problems than the original problem. Material solutions cannot solve our ultimate problems of life. We need spiritual solutions. Material solutions are compared to a person trying to hold on to a tail of a dog to cross the ocean. Dogs are good swimmers, you know. But if you hold on to the tail of a dog and you try to cross the ocean, it's not possible. Similarly, material solutions to overcome the real problems of life, it's actually not possible. We actually need spiritual solutions, especially in the form of books given to us by Srila Prabhupada. The reason I'm saying Prabhupada, of course there are so many teachers and there are so many spiritual texts out there, but the beauty of Srila Prabhupada's writings, it's very user-friendly. It's very, very easy to understand. And it's very, very authoritative and authorized texts. Otherwise, even these teachings can be very, very confusing. Like I remember a long time ago, I went with one of my relatives. And we went to this yoga studio and there's so many Sanskrit, just like we have these hangings here, Sanskrit. Like this yoga studio is an old hall. It was full of Sanskrit writings. And I asked my relative that took me there, I said, what does it say? And he was so proud he can read Sanskrit. So he was rattling off this Sanskrit and then I said, what does it mean? And the explanation he gave was like so, can't understand. Even for him, it's obvious like he's saying something but he's not understanding what he's saying. It's so confusing. So similarly, these ancient yoga texts, they're written in such a way that it's for like very, very advanced, intelligent and advanced yogis. It's hard for beginners to understand. So when we read books translated by Prabhupada, I can speak from my personal example coming from India. I read so many times Bhagavad Gita and other books being discussed, but it's not easy to understand. But when I first read Swami Prabhupada's books, it was so easy to understand. And as I said, it's very, very authorized. For example, I was listening to a conversation that Srila Prabhupada and his one guest that came to see him, they're having, it was recorded, it was a MP3. And in the conversation, the guest is saying how there is no God. And Prabhupada is asking, like, why you say that? The guest says, everybody can understand there's no God because you can't see it. You can't see him. And Prabhupada gave a very simple explanation. He said, you may not see God, but you can see how you're being controlled at every moment. So you can see there is somebody controlling you. There is something higher. And the guest says, maybe there's something controlling, but I call that a nature. I call that nature. It's not God. And Prabhupada asks him, so what's your understanding of the nature? And the guest says, nature means the energy, there's no form. And again, Prabhupada asked him a simple question, okay, so where is this knowledge coming from? Like you're speaking so enthusiastically about something, and here he is, 70-year-old sannyasi, swami, bring practicing spirituality all life. And this guest, hardly has any spiritual understanding, but he's like so authoritatively speaking to a saintly person. So Prabhupada asked him, so you're saying all these things, that's fine, but where's your knowledge coming from? What's the source? What's your authority? And the guest said, this is what I believe. And Prabhupada explained to him, you may believe something, but that's not necessarily a fact. We have to, when we're speaking, especially in spiritual circles, it has to be authorized. It has to have some backup. It has to be, authoritative. It's just like I went to a dentist, and I was dressed like this, and is this older gentleman dentist, and he started telling me all kinds of spiritual stuff that doesn't even make sense. I was trying to be polite. And then I said to him, just like, I have no knowledge about dentistry, and then I come to you and I give you all kinds of tips, how would you feel? He's like, no, I won't feel very good. I said, yeah, similarly, I'm studying spirituality, not trying to be proud or anything. But this is a fact. I'm living in the temple, I'm studying for 13, 14 years this yoga text. And you don't inquire, you just want to show off. So we don't make much progress in such a way. So, the beauty of Prabhupada's books is that they're very, very authoritative. It's not like his opinion or his imagination. It's coming down. These authorized texts are being handed down from a guru to a disciple, this disciplic succession, for the past many, many thousands of years. So when you read these books, you get to learn what the real yoga means, what's real meditation means. So, while we're discussing these points, it's very nice because, as they say, seeing the enemy is actually half the battle. Similarly, we may not know much, but just the fact we have taken our time to get together and discussing these things, it's a very wonderful sign. In Bengali, there is one great saint. He said, Ke ami kanamore jape tapatroy. Who I am, who I am, what's my position, why I do not want suffering, but there's so much suffering inflicted on me, and I want happiness, and it's very hard to find happiness. These are some basic questions an intelligent person asks. Just like we're discussing this book, Srimad Bhagavatam, it was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami, this great guru, to a student named King Parikshit. And King Parikshit was going to die in 7 days. So he approached his spiritual master and he asked him, I'm a king, I had everything, but still I cannot avoid death. It's just like, Steve Jobs, for example. He had more money than the US. Just in early 50s, he died. So money can't solve any problem. So King Parikshit was asking Sukadeva Goswami, I'm about to die in 7 days, so what am I supposed to do before I die as a human being? And his guru congratulated him, saying, wow, you know, this is a really good question. Because when you meet a spiritual person, you don't like shoot the breeze, you know, asking about all kinds of things. You ask direct spiritual questions. So Sukadeva Goswami congratulated his disciple, saying, your question is not just relevant for you, it's relevant for all time to come. Because in one sense, we're all dying. But at least Parikshit had 7 days notice, 7 days warning, but we don't know if it's, we have 7 seconds or 7 minutes. So King Parikshit asked this question, and Sukadeva Goswami answered him saying that the best thing for every human being to do in the short life is to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, you're all yogis. A yogi means it's one who balances things. That's one of the definition Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita. Yogi means the art of balancing spiritual life and material life, not just one-sided. Like the example is given of this bird called Hamsa. Hamsa means this bird, even if you give him or her milk mixed with water, this bird exactly knows how to drink just the milk and he will leave behind the water. It's got some mystic powers. Similarly, the world we're in is a combination of matter and spirit. Wherever you see, there is material energy and there is spiritual energy. So yogi means one who knows how to take shelter of the spiritual energy. Take shelter of Krishna, take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then it becomes complete. Otherwise, it's just one-sided. And the easiest process that's mentioned, especially for this day and age, how to take shelter of Krishna or how to tune into spiritual energy of Krishna is by chanting Krishna's names, chanting God's names. That's why when you come to any yoga place or any temple or mosque or church, this idea is there. You call on the names of God. And this way, we actually tune into the spiritual energy. Krishna has two energies. One is material and the other one is spiritual. And we have to learn the art of tuning into Krishna's spiritual energy. Right now, we are embedded in Krishna's material energy. And the symptoms are that we are growing old, we're in anxiety, you know, all these things we are discussing. But if we take shelter of Krishna's spiritual energy, then this ocean of material existence, this ocean of birth and death, it reduces to the size of a hoof print of a calf. I'm from India, I could easily understand this example. I don't know if you've seen this. When a calf's hoof print is there and when it rains, it gets filled with water. It's very easy to cross over. It's not a big deal. Similarly, this ocean-like material existence where we're drowning and we're struggling, this ocean-like material existence shrinks to the size of a hoof print of a calf. Bhagavatam is not talking even about the hoof print of a cow. It says about a calf. It's very teeny. It's very easy to cross. There's one beautiful song by one of our acharyas, one of our teachers. He says, Bajahure mana Sri Nanda Nandana Abhaya Charanaravindare. He's talking to his own mind. He's saying, oh mind, please take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nanda Nandana, that's another name for Krishna. And this way, you can actually become fearless, Abhaya Charan. You will actually become fearless. This is one of the basic understandings of a yogi given in Bhagavad Gita, that we have our senses, and the subtle sense is the mind. So above these gross senses is the mind, and above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. So we are seated in this body, which is like a chariot. And the senses are compared to the horses. And the mind is like the reins. And the intelligence is the driver and soul is the passenger. So if we use our intelligence to control the mind and senses, we actually have smooth ride. Control senses for what? It's very hard to control the senses. But Krishna gives an alternative of engaging in spiritual sensual activities. Then we can easily give up materialistic activities. We are discussing fear. This is example given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually given in the Krishna book, especially those devotees who are familiar. And Prabhupada gives the example of this demon Agasura. This demon Agasura, the demons have these powers of shape shifting. There's actually a painting back there in the wall there. And this demon actually took the shape of this huge snake. And he was actually lying down in the middle of the road of Vrindavan, where Krishna and his friends, cowherd boyfriends, they were playing. And the cowherd boys, they actually thought this was some kind of museum or something put there for them to play. And when they got closer, they could see this is not like a play thing, you know, because it's explained this snake was so huge, its mouth was like caves and was like, it was breathing so hot and fishy smell was coming out and was very scary, red eyes and like this. And it's mentioned that even the demigods, they were actually scared of Agasura. Even somebody like Indra was hiding and watching, you know, what Agasura is going to do. Even demigods are fearful, even in higher planetary systems. But the cowherd boys, they saw that this is not actually a play thing. This is actually a real snake and it could swallow them. But they looked at each other and said, never mind, Krishna was there anyways, you know, he will protect us. So they just happily started singing and dancing and just marched into this, you know, mouth of Agasura. And of course Krishna intervened and saved them. So this is the position of a devotee. One who takes shelter of Krishna, he actually becomes liberated. He actually becomes fearless. And what to speak of directly taking shelter of Krishna? There are so many examples in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that explains how even if you are connected to a devotee, even if somebody is God conscious, and if the God conscious person has got a dog, even the dog is liberated. The example of Sivananda Sen. Sivananda Sen was actually going to see Lord Chaitanya from Bengal to Orissa. And on the way, they came across this dog. And Sivananda Sen actually gave shelter to this dog. And he asked the cooks to give him special rice preparations. And the dog actually disappeared. It ran away somewhere. So Sivananda Sen was actually in anxiety, thinking, oh my God, you know, I didn't take care of this living being. Krishna sent him under my care. And when they actually reached Lord Chaitanya's place, they saw how Lord Chaitanya was actually feeding him coconut and the dog was actually chanting Hare Krishna. And it's mentioned that usually from the human form, you have chances of liberation. Usually animal form means you have to keep evolving. But this dog actually went to the kingdom of God just from the form, you know, dog's body. So there's so many examples given how this process is so powerful that whether you're practicing or you're nice to somebody who's practicing, it's all beneficial and it's so potent. And it's so joyful actually. Like Sarvatma Prabhu was singing this morning. So pleasing, so nice. It's not like a hard work to be in the temple room when somebody like him is singing. And after this, please make sure they get some breakfast. They have made wonderful breakfast today, Sonali and Keki. So we eat spiritual foodstuffs offered to Krishna. We sing the names of Krishna. And just by these simple activities, by reading these ancient yoga teachings, eating foodstuffs that's karma-free, vegetarian, and singing the name, different names of the same Supreme, we can actually perfect our lives. And we have something to offer whoever comes across. So it's a very beautiful process. So we request all of our guests to hope you're feeling home and you come again and, you know, you participate with all your heart. Do you, any of you have any questions? Yes. You can think about your question while I answer this. Is the mic working?
No. They have a lot of demonic qualities, and some humans have more demonic qualities than others. I was just wondering if a demon, well, first of all, are demons from like a lower planetary system, in like a different realm than the earth? And if they are, could like a demon himself take a form as a human?
This is like a conspiracy theory, right? I was not heading in that direction. But in the question is, if a demon can shape-shift and come as a human being, something like that, right? So the point is, in different ages, it's mentioned that the demons and the saintly people, they actually lived in different planets. But in this day and age we are living, within every human, there is actually like a demon and a saint, like in the Native American saying. Within everyone's heart, there is actually a good dog and a bad dog. And they both are barking very ferociously. And whichever dog you choose to feed, and that's what is going to get stronger. So, yes, there are usually like, you know, there are different planets and there are different species and demoniac entities like that. But in this day and age, it's not so important to focus on those things. It's better to focus on our demoniac qualities and try to overcome them. Bhrigupati Prabhu wants to answer the question. Please. Yeah, the demon is also a form. A spirit soul takes birth as a human, it takes birth as a demigod, it can take birth as a demon, so it's the same spirit soul in different forms. So when you die from one form, you can go to another form. So if you could have been a demon, and then you take birth in a human form, and then you can progress if you properly use your human form and you can become a god. So this cycle is going on. It's like a roller coaster.
And
Yes, it's a question of consciousness. Demon is not necessarily like somebody with horns and pitchfork and like this, with a tail. It's a question of consciousness. If you're devoted, you have values in life, and, you know, you're living a godly life, then you're considered a, you know. Yes. What's your name? Nicole. Yes. Always a demon in the sense like what we're discussing, the qualities, and everybody has free will. So you can misuse your free will and, you know, act like a demon, or you can properly use your free will and be in harmony with the creation and love God and serve God, and this way you can be liberated. So nobody is like eternally this or eternally that, you know, everybody has given a chance to change and progress. Anything else? Yes, bro. You want to answer that, Archita Prabhu?
It's hard that anybody who's 100% good or 100% bad, especially in the Kali Yuga. So karma means action and reaction. Whatever action you perform is going to produce a reaction, good or bad. You may be the worst money person in the world, but you go down the street and somebody's begging you to buy a house. That's a good act. And you'll get rewarded for that. Or unless God says, give us $5 back and $7.
That's why Prabhupada wanted us to do this chanting, street chanting. We go Harinam. So when people hear the holy name, even if they have no knowledge, they progress and they accumulate spiritual credits. And also book distribution. We hear so many examples how somebody receives this book. And they have no knowledge of anything spiritual or any good karma, but then they changed, like the last, when did the students come? Sunday. I was talking to a group of students and one boy kept asking questions. So I thought he was part of the college, but then later on he told me that he was not part of the college student that came. He was a separate guy that just showed up for the first time. And I said, how did you find out about the Krishna temple? He said, oh, I was searching for spirituality online. I was an atheist. This is like a 17-year-old boy. And I came across this Bhagavad Gita, as it is. And I ordered it, and I read it, and I became a pure devotee 2 months ago. And then he says, I chant 16 rounds, and then I want to stay in the ashram. Is it possible? It's just like, I was amazed, you know. He was so enthusiastic and sincere, and just from, you know, automatically ordering a book online. So we have to distribute these books, and chanting is so important. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.